Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Unfortunately, Ron is off watching his son play his first pitching game of Little League.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we are the host of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Sarah. Sarah, a former educator turned rare disease patient and advocate.
Hi, Sarah.
And if you'd like to read articles about her, you can read about her on themighty.com. And she also has a blog called Spoons and Adrenal. Is that correct?
It is.
Okay.
Well, Sarah, I understand that there are actually three types of adrenal insufficiency. Could you please tell our listeners what the different types of adrenal insufficiency are and which one do you have?
Well, there are three major types of adrenal insufficiency. Primary adrenal insufficiency is due to impairment of the adrenal glands. About 80% of those are due to an autoimmune disease called Addison's disease or autoimmune adrenalitis.
Okay.
One subtype is called idiopathic, meaning that there's no known cause. And then there's other cases due to congenital adrenal hyperplasia or an adenoma or tumor of the adrenal gland.
Okay.
And then there is secondary adrenal insufficiency, which is caused by impairment of the pituitary gland or hypothalamus. And its principal causes include a pituitary adenoma, which can suppress the production of adrenocorticotropic hormone, also known as ACTH, and it leads to adrenal deficiency unless the hormones are replaced. And Sheehan syndrome, which is an impairment of the pituitary gland and is actually really common after childbirth.
Oh.
And then there's also one called tertiary adrenal insufficiency, which is due to disruptions with the hypothalamus.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes a decrease in the release of corticotropin-releasing hormone, or CRH. And causes of that can include brain tumors and a sudden withdrawal from long-term exogenous steroid use, for example, like using steroids for allergies or lupus or something else. And that's the most common cause. I'm kind of an oddity, actually. I am officially diagnosed as secondary adrenal insufficiency due to hypopituitarism, but we also suspect that I am idiopathic primary adrenal insufficiency as well.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Quite complex.
Yeah.
When did these symptoms begin?
They started about 10 years ago.
So what were those symptoms? I guess I should have asked.
That's okay. It started mostly with really extreme fatigue. I was tired all the time. Rest didn't help. Caffeine didn't have any effect. And eventually I found that it was getting really difficult to stay awake at work, and even getting to work was really hard.
Oh, wow. That's rough. We've talked to some people that are narcoleptics, and mm-hmm. It sounds like you're right in their ballpark.
Yeah.
Well, ballpark, I guess I've got Ron on my mind.
Yeah.
Sarah, when were you first diagnosed, and how long did it take for you to get that diagnosis?
I was diagnosed actually 2 years ago today.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was kind of interesting, but to realize that today was my diagnosis anniversary. In the Addison's world, we call it an Addiversary.
Okay.
It took about a decade of going to the doctor and asking, why is it that I'm feeling so poorly all the time? And the answer that I kept getting was, well, you're a mom and all moms are tired.
Oh, my God.
So for a lot of years, nobody even looked into anything.
Wow.
That's terrible.
Well, had you ever heard of adrenal insufficiency before you were given your diagnosis?
I hadn't. I actually had to look it up myself. In the spring of 2016, we did a series of continued testing because I think the doctor was kind of getting tired of me coming in so much. And in a round of labs, he decided to test my cortisol level.
Okay.
When it came back, he told me it was a little low, but nothing to worry about. So I didn't do anything. About 6 months later, I found out that the depression and anxiety that I had been feeling that was getting worse and worse the longer I was feeling sick, I ended up kind of losing control mm-hmm. of the depression and the anxiety. So I decided to look up what cortisol was and if there was any relationship between cortisol and depression.
Right.
And I'm sure you can imagine my terror when I read about Addison's disease and adrenal insufficiency. So I asked the doctor, well, what was my cortisol level?
Mm-hmm.
And he pulled it up and he said that it was nearly undetectable.
And is that important to have?
Really?
Yeah.
It's important to have?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
You will die without cortisol.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was very, very lucky to be alive. And that kind of, so it was my own research into what cortisol was that led me to adrenal insufficiency. And then I spent another 7 months advocating for myself, seeing other specialists, other doctors who continued to blow me off. So it was, you know, like I said, about 7 more months before I actually got a diagnosis and started to get better.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the first doctor that you went to, when he said that he was surprised that it was so low that you were lucky to be alive, why couldn't he have diagnosed it immediately? Why would it take another 7 months? That kind of confounds me.
Well, because there's not a lot known about it, adrenal insufficiency. And so a lot of general practitioners are really afraid to diagnose the condition. So he said I needed to see other specialists.
Okay.
And it had actually been another doctor in his office who drew the original labs and never followed through.
Oh,
wow.
I'm sorry.
You fell through the cracks. That's terrible.
Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah.
You have to be an advocate for yourself, right?
Absolutely.
Do they know what causes this disease?
Well, there's a number of known causes as well as a significant number of people who get this diagnosis of adrenal insufficiency, but they never know why.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the causes that they do know can be infection, like tuberculosis, damage to the adrenal glands or pituitary glands due to a head trauma or car accident. Hypopituitarism is one. Opioid and steroid use for other diseases and pain management can actually disrupt the hypothalamic pituitary axis and cause adrenal insufficiency. And then, of course, there's also the autoimmune cause.
Right. Okay. Well, do you actually know anybody else who has adrenal insufficiency? And does anybody else in your family have it?
Yeah, my daughter and my husband and I, all three have adrenal insufficiency.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But I've also met dozens of patients through online support groups,
mm-hmm.
which has been really kind of grounding and recognizing that we're not alone in this, and also kind of empowering to hear how many of us have similar stories for how long it took to get a diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
sure.
and the kind of care that the kind of fight it takes for all of us to get the care that we need.
Uh-huh.
And so it's, in some ways it's really kind of nice to see that we're not alone in that either, but it's infuriating.
Yeah. Oh,
sure,
I bet.
Sure.
I bet.
And I would imagine that most of the stories are like yours, where it took forever and they were, you know, just passed around. Yeah. Passed around from doctor to doctor, and the diagnosis is delayed. And in the same time frame, you're suffering.
But it is surprising. I mean, when you have a blood test and the results aren't within the expected limits, you know, you do expect your doctor to take notice and take action.
Right.
While I'm seeing all of these other people who are suffering through the diagnostic process,
mm-hmm.
we've seen a ridiculous number of patients who have died prior to obtaining a diagnosis because it takes so much time for anybody to take us seriously.
Oh my gosh, I'm so
sorry.
That's terrible. That alone should be enough to kind of signal to the to medical health professionals that they need to be more cognizant.
And this is why, and this is why you're being an advocate, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Makes sense. Do you typically see an endocrinologist for care, or, you know, like what type of doctors do you see for this type of problem?
I do see an endocrinologist. Most of the time, though, my primary care provider takes care of my medication management.
Okay.
And the biggest reason for that is in my state, there is only one endocrinologist in the entire state. So my doctor is actually 14 hours one way to get to him.
Whoa.
And where did you say you live? Wyoming?
Wyoming, yeah.
I do. Yep, Wyoming.
Wow, that's terrible.
Do you have an option to utilize like telemedicine or any, you know, to visit them? Or have a visit visually and digitally over your phone?
Like Amwell?
Yeah.
We usually just communicate through portal messaging.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically emailing back and forth.
Right.
And then if there's any major decisions that need to be made, I discuss it with my primary care provider, and then he will call my endocrinologist directly.
Okay.
And how have your healthcare providers treated your condition? And are there any medications that you could take to help with this condition?
Yeah, anybody who has adrenal insufficiency absolutely has to be on replacement steroids.
Okay.
They're corticosteroids is the class. So the first line of defense is hydrocortisone. It's simple to prescribe, and it's bioidentical mm-hmm. to the cortisol that our bodies make. So that's what I started with. Unfortunately, like I kind of mentioned earlier, I'm a bit of an anomaly,
mm-hmm.
and my adrenal insufficiency was very poorly controlled on hydrocortisone, and I spent a lot of time in the emergency room. So we tried prednisone, dexamethasone, which are both longer-lasting, more powerful steroids, and they didn't really work either. So eventually, we switched to a repurposed insulin pump, which delivers a continuous infusion of Solu-Cortef, which is the equivalent of hydrocortisone, 24 hours a day. So that's
wow.
how I treat my condition.
Wow. So I'm sure there is a need for that. You know, that's a great idea.
Yeah, that was a good invention.
Yeah, amazing. For some reason, I'm stumbling over all my words today. My apologies. Sarah, I've read several of your articles through the Mighty, and your article titled "When the ER Doesn't Know How to Handle an Adrenal Crisis," it really brought home the vital need for experienced triage nurses in the ER, first of all, because they need to know, you know, who
what
needs
to
get
for.
Back, who needs care immediately. But can you tell us about that very scary experience you had at the ER?
Yeah, that was really quite terrifying, actually. It was the first time I'd been to the emergency room since my diagnosis, and I really was afraid I was going to die. It was difficult to breathe. I couldn't hold my head up. I couldn't stand. I couldn't walk. We got to the emergency room, and the gentleman at the admissions counter told me to go have a seat, and my husband tried to explain to him what an adrenal crisis was, and he used the words stress hormone, and the admissions clerk thought that we were saying that I was having a panic attack.
Oh.
So they told me to go sit in the waiting room, and it was taking longer and longer and longer for anybody to come and see me. And I saw several other patients stand up and walk back. And my husband finally went up to the window and he said, "Unless you guys want to see her die in the waiting room, somebody needs to come and get her now." And so they did. They kind of realized that it was a little bit more urgent than a panic attack, which is also terrifying. But because of that, I put together a handout explaining what an adrenal crisis is, what to look for, and how to manage treatment. I included a lot of resources in the document, so that way, if people wanted to learn more information, they could see what the sources were, but also so they could see that I wasn't just making things up, that this is legitimate information. And I actually had, the next time I went into the emergency room, I brought it with me. And the doctor asked if he could borrow it for a few minutes. And a nurse came back in later and she said, "That was really great. Thank you for sharing that. I had no idea about any of this."
Wow.
Right.
Lack of education.
Well, and also, I mean, you know, maybe it was a 30-minute lecture in medical school about, you know, so when, you know, with the strain of the ER and everything, it's great that you've created such a document and that you're an advocate for yourself and that your husband's also there to support you, because
for sure
it sounds like it's needed.
Right. And I know that we're not interviewing your child or your husband, but do they have similar experiences where they have to go to the ER routinely or regularly?
No, they actually are a lot more stable than I am. And we also have learned a lot more in the last 2 years about how to sort of mitigate some of the risk at home.
Okay.
And manage things a little bit better ourselves so that we can avoid getting to the point where
sure.
one of us needs
sure.
the ER.
Right. And then do you think in the future you should have an ambulance transport you to the hospital? I noticed when I go to a hospital, immediately they start an IV, and at least you're being treated more quickly than if you walked in.
Yeah, you know, in theory, that would be great. I have been transported by an ambulance before. And this was after my worst experience in the ER, but they were not able to get an IV started. I'm the worst patient for IVs. My veins are small, they're deep, and they roll. Oh. So we actually have now put in a power port so that they can get IV access quickly when it's needed.
What I don't understand, what's a power port?
A power port is a small medical device that they put in your chest, just sort of slightly below the clavicle, and it's got a cannula like an IV, but it goes right into a vein alongside your heart, and it's there all the time.
Okay.
And it has a little pouch at the top of it that they have a special needle that just goes right into that pouch instead of trying to find your vein.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, and Sarah, it sounds like you, like we were saying, that you have a great support system there. In addition to your family, do you use, you said that you do use online and other support groups. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty active in several groups, built up some really strong relationships and friendships through those. I'm also an administrator in the largest adrenal diseases support group on Facebook. We have almost 10,000 members worldwide. So it's a really incredible community.
And what is the name of that group?
It's called Adrenal Diseases Support Group.
Okay.
I will find it.
And they have they also have an awareness page that's public. It's called Adrenal Diseases Support Global.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we'll put a link for that on our website as well.
Great. Sarah, do you have any tips or hints for somebody who has been recently diagnosed with adrenal insufficiency?
I do. First, I would say try not to panic. When you look it up, you'll see the death rate of adrenal crisis is absolutely terrifying, but it's not an inevitability. There is hope that a new normal can be found. And while you might not be as active as you once were, or you may end up on disability, there's still so much hope as we learn more about the disease. Second, I would say read, read, read. Every piece of research you can find, read it. Be sure you understand it. Because odds are, your endocrinologist is a special in diabetes, not adrenal insufficiency.
Okay.
Very few endocrinologists will actually see an adrenal insufficiency patient in their career. Mm-hmm. So they operate out of old textbooks. They often have not read the most updated research. So making sure that you are as educated as you can possibly be gives you a good opening to have those crucial conversations with your care provider.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
So along with that, be your own best advocate. And the way to do that, make sure you have an emergency injection. That is something that you may have to fight for. While it seems like common sense to most of us, there are endocrinologists who believe that you live close enough to an emergency room and you can just trust that they will take care of a crisis for you. So just know that that's not good enough. You absolutely must have an emergency injection with you at all times and a medical alert bracelet, and make sure that everybody around you knows how to help if you do collapse. And then finally, find a support group and hold on to the knowledge and understanding that you are not alone in this. There is always somebody available to help you.
That's perfect. And if our listeners want to learn more about you personally and the adrenal insufficiency path that you've been following, how can they do that?
I have a blog that you mentioned earlier. It's called Spoons and Adrenals. It's on WordPress. And then most of my favorite posts from my blog have also been published via The Mighty. And actually, I found them on Yahoo Lifestyle. And my article that you referenced about the
ER visit,
emergency room visit, it was actually published on MSN as well.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So those are all good ways to kind of figure out what my journey has looked like.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And it's great that you've gotten all of that information out there and available to people who who may be new to this or have a family member or friend who's been recently diagnosed. Sarah, thank you ever so much for spending the time with us today. We really, really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a good learning experience for all of us and for our listeners. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I wish many, many spoons and lots of luck to anybody else going through this.
Great.
Thank you.
If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast.
Till next week.